Hey.
That wasn't a very loud applause. That it just wasn't.
You don't think so? No. Seriously, everybody. No. Thank you.
There you go.
No, Harry, that's all for you.
Very nice.
Yeah. I like it. Yeah. My good friend, Harry. Harry, how have you been?
Hanging in there, Barry. You know, it's been absolutely crazy.
Yeah, no, I know. But listen, speaking of crazy, I have a question.
Yes, okay. Sir.
Right. Because, oh, by the way, everybody knows this is outside the beltway of healthcare.
Hate the name. Okay, go with your question.
We can work on that, Harry.
All right. I'm just saying I hate the name.
Doesn't need to have that much anger.
I don't have anger.
We could deal with it. Now, how do you
feel? Right. Okay.
I understand how you feel. Okay, listen. I have a question for you. You know that I grew up in Fairfax, like 15 miles from Tyson's Corner. I remember when there used to be this small motorcycle track at the intersection of 123 and Route 7. Okay. So here's what I want to know. And I don't know politics associated with this. Okay. I'm going to ask you, you know, set it down. Okay. No politics. Why is there such a divide between Virginia and Maryland with the Cabin John Bridge?
Well, it's not just because we own the entire river. I mean, we do. We own the entire river. Maryland, the entire Potomac River.
There's not even a section.
Maryland's jurisdiction.
All the way over? That's yours?
The entire river. But it's also an issue of signage, right? Like in Maryland, you know where you are at any given moment. Virginia, once Marylanders would go over to Virginia, there's no signage. There's no nothing. You had no idea where you were. I mean, one minute you're on Route 7, the next minute you're on Route 15. And then before you know it, you're on some road called Backlick Road.
Hey. Backlick. I grew up just a mile or two away from Backlick Road. So basically you're saying that people that lived on the other side of the Cabin John Bridge, number one, didn't own the river, but touched the border. And the only thing I got to say about that, Harry, that means that all of the pollution that's in the Potomac River, that's your fault. You have to own that. You've got to take accountability.
In Virginia, as soon as you set foot in the Potomac River, you are in the state of Maryland. Did you know that?
I did not know that. I did not. And so our listeners also, that's something new. But no, Harry, I appreciate it. Now I know exactly where I came from. We were literate in Virginia, and we could not create signage. So there you go.
You never knew where you were, Barry. I mean, seriously. I mean, even going over to Tyson's Corner Mall at one time was kind of like, where are we? This is weird. I mean,
you used to come over to Bloomingdale's all the time. I don't want to hear about it. You were a Bloomies kid. All right, listen. I want to say this to our audience, and not because our producer told us to. But listen, we do our best to walk the line between facts, fiction, and politics. And a lot of our views are based upon what we see happening or not. And as often the case, like palm readers, we get it partly right, maybe mostly wrong. And so I want to encourage you, if there's something that you hear today or you hear in any other of our podcasts, any concerns, I need to have you direct those straight at my colleague, Harry. Okay, Harry's email, you can look him up. He's on the website. And he will respond very quickly, right?
And I'll ask Sinead McGuire to respond.
Yeah. Oh, Sinead also, I think, I don't know if she's still here or not. She's our producer. I had a question for her. And when she reappears, we'll ask her. She tries to keep us on track. But listen, Harry.
Yes, sir.
Harry, last week, I want to go out there.
It's crazy.
And I want to say, no. I want to say that I was right on a few things, such as the removal of optometry and dental from the Budget Reconciliation Act. But this is where I take accountability to our audience and to you personally, as my friend, to you. I am. You said, watch out, nothing is off the table right now. Nothing is off the table. And in the last week, we've had an infrastructure bill passed. There has been a Democratic framework for the Medicare program under Part D to negotiate drug prices. for certain drugs. And we have a new Virginia Republican governor, Glenn Youngkin.
And State House.
And State House.
Yeah.
What? So tell me, what happened in D.C.? Like, how did all these pieces of the puzzle come together? And then somehow on Friday, I think it was Friday, we wake up and we have an infrastructure bill.
Right. Well,
what happened?
Actually, I think it was early Saturday morning that we had the infrastructure bill. We saw Glenn Youngkin taking a lead over Terry McAuliffe, and it was becoming more and more sizable. I was telling folks, look, you know, I think we're going to see Youngkin win in Virginia over Terry McAuliffe. However, I said, keep an eye on New Jersey, because, you know, at the end of the day, you know, although I did say Murphy is most likely going to win the governor of New Jersey, it's going to be a lot closer than anybody anticipated. And we did not know who the winner of that race was going to be until the next day. That's how close it was. It was a very close election.
That's true.
So you saw some panic set in. In the Democratic caucus in the House. And they also wanted to get the narrative off of what happened in Virginia, New Jersey, and some of these other off-year elections that took place. So there was a quick move to move forward on budget, infrastructure, and reconciliation. They couldn't get it off the ground together. They just couldn't do it. The moderate Democrats sent a letter to the Speaker, and they said, the moderate Democrats in the House, I should say, sent a letter to the Speaker and said, we're not voting for the reconciliation bill until we have a real Congressional Budget Office score of the bill, which means a real number on how much that bill is going to cost. They're not going to do it. And the Speaker was forced to push at that moment to decouple the bipartisan infrastructure bill with the budget reconciliation bill. And that was met with a lot of opposition. The progressives were opposed to it. The squad, which is led by Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, was opposed to it. And somehow the Speaker managed to get some sort of deal together with the Progressive Caucus.
I know.
To get that bill over the hump. But let's be clear. She would not have gotten that bill over the hump if she didn't have Republicans also vote for the bill.
Yeah, I mean, you gotta say that Speaker Pelosi is extraordinary, truly extraordinary in her ability to pull things together. Because again, if you had asked me, and I think you would have said the same thing, can you decouple those two bills? And the answer was absolutely not. Now, we didn't want to necessarily say that, but I mean, I think that was our general view, maybe the general consensus, that they had to stay together. And now we're out there in the situation where we have an infrastructure bill. And importantly for you, Harry, living in rural Maryland on the other side of a river with Cabin John Bridge, you are going to receive high-speed internet service. So I just want to let you know about that in the next 3 to 5 years. But no, seriously. I mean, so we have infrastructure done. Okay.
Right.
There was bipartisan support for that infrastructure.
Correct. The Republicans, Speaker Pelosi was not going to be able to pass that bill if she did not have Republican commitments to support it. Because keep in mind that the squad, which is, you know, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and several others, they all voted against the infrastructure bill. They did not vote for it.
Even last week.
On Friday, they did not vote for it because they viewed it as giving away their leverage on the bigger package, which is the reconciliation package.
And
it was yesterday, I believe, the congresswoman from Queens, New York, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, sent a message to her constituents saying that she fears that they've lost all their leverage to get that reconciliation bill done. She's not hopeful that it's going to get done by the 15th of November when the CBO score is supposed to come back. Now, I'm skeptical that we're going to see a Congressional Budget Office score by the by November 15th. That's extremely ambitious.
Right. Well, we know, and everybody knows this, that right. there has to be a reconciliation bill of some type. Right. You got to keep the government going. It doesn't feel like, Harry, that shutting down the government is a viable option this year.
Well, Barry,
although maybe I'm wrong. Maybe that could happen.
I don't think it will be. I don't think it will be an option. But Barry, this is reminiscent to me of what happened in 1993. So in 1993, when the Clinton administration, Bill Clinton, sent his budget bill to the floor, there was a lot of wrangling going on in the House to get that budget bill passed. You had at the time Speaker Foley, Majority Leader Gephardt, Boehner of Michigan, who was the majority whip. They all were gathered around a member of Congress named Marjorie Margolis Mizvinsky. She's just Marjorie Margolis now, I believe. Her son is married to Chelsea Clinton. I believe her son is married to Chelsea Clinton. But anyway,
you are such a factual historian.
Well, anyway,
I
love this stuff. You got to understand.
No, I know you do. Stuff,
but Marjorie Margolis Mizvinsky represented Montgomery County, Pennsylvania, which is the main line of Pennsylvania. That's where millionaires live, right? All those people on the main line, they take the train to New York, to New York City every day, and that's where they work and they come back. She ended up switching her vote and voted for the bill. And then in 1994, the Republican wave set in. The Republicans got the majority back in the House after a 40-year minority in the House. They got the majority back in the House. The Senate flipped. But what added insult to injury is that bill that Marjorie Margolis Mizvinsky and all those Democrats were forced to walk the plank on didn't move in the Senate. And I'm seeing that happening now, right? You're going to have a reconciliation bill that may very well be approved in the House if Nancy Pelosi can really strong arm these moderate Democrats to vote for this package. It very well could move in the House. However, there's nothing hanging over Senator Joe Manchin's head anymore, Democrat from West Virginia, to make a deal because the bipartisan infrastructure bill has been approved. So the question remains, is it going to actually pass in the Senate? And that's a serious head scratcher. I just don't know.
So the possibility is, because you know, we've been bantering this back and forth, I guess the possibility is a lot of the really big things in the reconciliation bill, and you know, we talk a lot about healthcare. So, you know, dental, optometry, hearing, Part D drug negotiation. Those are very big aspects of the Medicare program. Again, I guess, Harry, it's possible we have to have a reconciliation bill because we have to have a reconciliation bill, right? We got to have one for 2022, but these are things that we could see decoupled and kicked.
Well, also, don't forget, we've got a debt ceiling coming up, right? Now that this budget infrastructure, this bipartisan infrastructure bill has been approved, it's going to cause spending to go up. I think the president is right now, if you noticed, there hasn't been bill signing ceremony yet. He's holding off on it. Because even though, you know, that debt ceiling that McConnell helped Schumer get over the hump, right? That's set to expire here in early December. But once that infrastructure bill is in place, it'll expire. It very well could expire sooner. So that's hanging over the heads of the Democratic caucus. And McConnell has already said, you're on your own on that one. I'm not helping you again. You've got the votes to be able to approve it.
This feels
so
like
go ahead and approve it.
gunfight at the OK Corral.
Oh, this is the, it's more than a gunfight. It's like a knife fight. This is the fight. This is that fight that was in Anchorman, right? Do you remember the movie Anchorman?
Yes.
When they all converged and you know, and all of a sudden, you know, Will Ferrell was like, you know, Brick killed a guy, right? Because he had the trident. I mean, that's what it's going to be like. It's going to be ugly.
All right. Well, I'm going to put you on the spot. Okay. Because I always do put you on the spot. I do also have a question for you. Because you know, I have a lot of questions. Okay. Here's my question. Just on Part D drugs, for example, do you see that happening this year? Give me a prediction on that piece of potential legislation to make.
I think it's going to be very, very difficult to move.
You know, that's spoken like a true policy person.
Well, no.
Very, very difficult. No, I ask you a yes or no question. Very, very difficult to move.
Look, strange things can happen, but pharma is out in full force, as well as bio and some of the other usual suspects. I think it's going to be hard to do. And again, at the end of the day, I think a lot of these Democrats, a lot of these folks in the Democratic caucus, they're spooked right now about what happened on that off-year election.
So how come you don't want to know my opinion? Never ask me my opinion on anything. I always
want to know your opinion, Barry.
And you don't really, actually.
It always goes back to those ducks in your backyard.
Oh,
go ahead. Give us your opinion.
I don't think it's happening. I don't think it's happening in terms of that. This is not a political commentary one way or the other. It seems to me there's too many other pieces that need to be looked at in Part D drug reform to the extent it's necessary, what it looks like. And I don't think that's happening this year. I'm going out there. You're hedging your bet a little bit. Very unlikely. I'm saying no. Not happening this year, but Harry, I do want to know.
Can I just say something real quick though?
Maybe.
There are some must pass pieces of legislation that have to happen too. Right,
right.
We got Medicare payments that need to be done.
We've got
the user fee acts that need to be done. I mean, so we're looking down the barrel here of must pass legislation that has to happen. So. You know, and the one thing about members of Congress is they don't have, you know, they're not like Windows. They don't multitask well. You know, they're focusing on one thing at a time, and they operate always on a deadline.
Clearly, you learn that on the Hill. You learn the same. I don't mean to give you a hard time today, Harry, but I got to say, ever since you defined the fact that I lived in Virginia. That we didn't have signage. You've made
it's terrible signage. Open. Come on.
So no, those things have to happen. Sequestration, for example, also has to be dealt with in Medicare. The 2% cut that is out there. I think there was general bipartisan view to kick the can on that again for another year. So that's also a budget reconciliation piece. So no, you're right. I have another important question I have for you, Harry, is the status of your truck. For those of you who don't listen to us frequently, Harry was going into the DC office and decided to sideswipe a concrete column. He has many excuses for why it happened, but Harry, is it fixed? That's what we want to know.
I got it fixed immediately. I can't drive with a sideswipe. I can't do it. I'm too retentive. Can't do it. I took it to the shop literally the next day.
Next day. Well, I'm actually surprised that you even took it home because some people actually would have driven it straight to the shop. So you all.
I went straight to the shop to get an estimate, came home, and then the next day it took it right in.
Very happy for you. I'm happy for your truck too.
I'm happy for my truck too.
The column with the, what color was your truck, by the way?
My truck is still blue.
Still blue. So the
it's
column
still
with
blue.
The, you,
the column now, the column paint. Now has some blue.
Column with the blue paint on it.
Well, okay. Blue fleck.
Blue fleck. And I know you're going to go down there and clean it with a scrub brush. So Anyways, and I appreciate not going into my ducks on this particular because we're having a
Your ducks are going to be. Listen, I know you were. I know you're all worried that it's.
I am. No, my wife is very worried. It's going to be cold.
For your ducks. Your ducks are going to be fine.
Are you sure?
I'm positive.
I mean, because you couldn't even guarantee a particular piece of legislation, and now your ducks are going to be fine.
Ducks will be fine. You just have to, like, you know, just keep an eye. You know, you don't have any coyotes or foxes around. That's all.
All right. Okay. And I see Sinead, our producer. And Sinead, this is also where you put up that 5-4-3-2-1 deal. She's got the two. She's we're at 2-0.
So we're
at
20 minutes.
20 minutes. Okay, that's great. But Sinead, also, to put you on the spot a little bit, are we at, have we crossed 100 listeners? Have we crossed 100?
We're steady from last week.
Steady. What does steady mean?
So we have more listeners than CNN has viewers, is what she's trying to say.
Exactly.
Right on.
Hey, Sinead. That's good news.
Great news.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for your guidance. You know,
I wanted to say, Barry, in a future episode here, I do think our colleague, Lindsay Ryan, we should probably invite her back and talk about the Fifth Circuit's decision to put a temporary stay, on the vaccine mandate on the 100 employees or more.
We will do that.
I think this is absolutely fascinating to me to watch all this unfold and play out.
Sinead, note to self, let's get Ms. Lindsay back on, because we've had the Fifth Circuit decision. We've had the interim final rule from Medicare discussing certain providers that have to have vaccinated individuals. And then we also have the OSHA rules that have come out, and Lindsay was talking about those. And I can't tell you that I've read any of these rules. So we're going to get her back. That's up to you to make that happen. And I think.
Barry, let's also face it. I think everybody liked Lindsay more than they liked me and you. I'm just throwing that out there.
I know, but you, I'm glad you embraced that she liked everyone more than you. You didn't say you.
No, I think everybody that listens liked her more than me and you.
And you?
You. Yeah.
All right. Well, folks, thanks again for joining us today. Remember, that was kind of a weak set of claps there. All right, there we go. All right, thank you, guys.
Thank you, everyone.
We want to remind listeners that the choice of a lawyer and lobbyist is an important decision and should not be based solely on advertising. The information and discussions in this podcast do not constitute legal advice, and listeners should consult legal counsel regarding their specific subject matter. Thank you for listening to Inside Law, a podcast produced by Polsinelli.